Minutes after three, and I think we're starting with HCAP, is that correct? A public health clinic? Excuse me. Three minutes after 12, I apologize.
All right, so before we start, I guess, just wanted to have a quick conversation about the increase in personnel for accounting.
And Jackie's not here, do we need to wait for her? Oh, there she is.
Which, where's accounting at? I'm sorry, on the, in the packet.
Accounting is page 7.
So it's really pretty close.
Page 7. But on the presentation you received yesterday, it showed an increase for an accounting supervisor position for this year.
Are we on the record again?
Yes. I'm pulling this up.
And we're on page 7.
So I wanted to talk on the high level. Accounting has 7 employees. We're asking to go up to 8. That is adding an accounting supervisor position. And the majority of my activities right now are focused on accounts payable, so I kind of don't have time to get and do a lot of things. Brett asks me to do things, and I'm like, I don't have the bandwidth. I can't help you. And so this is to free up my time so that we have a dedicated person who's supervising those 2 people. They can be there. They can have meetings with managers and to resolve some of the issues that are happening within that department. So do y'all have any other questions? Or did I answer the questions that you had? Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So your mix of, what is the mix of people in your department? Like 2 accounts?
Yes, I have 1 person who does payroll and employee benefits. And I'm the backup for benefits. So whenever she's out, I have to take the employee calls. I love to take the employee calls. Did I say have to? That's not the way I meant it. But she handles payroll and employee benefits. We have 3 accountants that are up here. They handle financial reporting, accounting transactional entries, and budgets. I have, and then 2 accounts payable people who, you know, pay the vendors. They pay HCAP bills. They also pay patient refunds. So they're...
There's also some analysis in the accountants and helping me with treasury management.
Right. With investment. And right now...
So you make the 7th?
I make the 7th one, yes.
Yeah.
I had to think about that.
Thank you.
Do y'all have any questions or concerns? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So the rest of the presentations that are scheduled are going to be related to public health. And so Shannon's going to bring up just a high level. It is on.
I was speaking so well. Now they're...
And so we've kind of been through this column. We didn't show you the public health column yesterday. And so other revenue of 127, can you scroll up just a little bit? We've got a couple lines missing, I believe. And so we get $600,000 of county funding. That started this year. Grant funding, $576,000, and then other revenue of $127,150. Payroll $1.4 million, operating expenses $175,000, so a total operating of $1,572,000. And then here's really what I wanted to mention to you is that so public health shows upside down about $270,000 next year. Most of the funding comes through grants, obviously with the help from county funding, but we've got a grant.
The public infrastructure grant that you see, the second one on your list, the PHIG.
Yeah. do you just want to speak to that grant and the funding?
You can. I can. Shalene can jump in anytime. The Public Health Infrastructure Grant is a lump sum funds that were given during COVID to help expand the department and have a more sustainable public health infrastructure. That grant funding ends in 2027. There are a number of things in works that I'm not to a point that I can say in public. We're working with the state, the region, to offset this shortfall based on this grant ending. There's some real positive things going on, but they're not to a place that we can say yay or nay. So some of the people on this grant are essential public health workers, which we are required to keep. So when that funding runs out, they would have to move on to the county funding. That will not cover it. So if the things don't come into place that gives us the additional funding to be able to cover that shortfall, we will have to go to the county and to you as a board to ask to reduce the $1.9 million emergency contingency fund that's in the public health district to cover that shortfall of those essential workers' pay. The total amount is $269,429.
How much is the money set aside for emergency?
$1.9 million. And that $127,150 other revenue you see is the interest from that money.
So.
Oh, the $127,000. Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
So we've. The required amount to keep is $1.9 million. We've got that invested in money market, so it's earning interest. Today, we've got 400 and some odd thousand dollars above and beyond that 1.9. I think we'll finish the year with still some cushion there, but we do want to be looking out in front of us to say that if this isn't get the funding doesn't come through as we're hoping, but we've got, what's the term, required people, required?
Essential personnel.
Essential personnel to cover that we'll have to do that. We'll spend into that, and we'll start approaching that 1.9 at some point. Just trying to be in front of out in front of this, make sure y'all know, and then we would possibly at some point have to go to the county to say, contractually, you know, we're going to keep 1.9. This is what's going on. We need to be able to dip further into that and lower that amount.
We've had this issue in the past with public health, correct? I mean, we had to, the emergency fund had a larger amount in it before.
So,
we had to use some because the county didn't step up, right?
So contract 1.0, when we were going to transition, when the public health district was going to go away, we're figuring out how we're going to transition, whether to us, to the county, to somebody else, yes, it was 2.5. But last year's funding didn't come through at the county for whatever reason, and so went back and said, hey, we need to go down to 1.9 so we can ensure that we can function and not cost MCHD taxpayers any money, because those are two different buckets for us.
Yeah, ultimately, this is public health, so the responsibility of the county.
Yes.
And, so you're making the argument that if it comes up with a shortfall, we need to go back to the county and ask to make up the difference.
Yes.
But we got to keep in mind that the county may not
correct
do anything. They didn't come up with the $600,000 until we beat them over the head for 2 years.
Correct.
So I'm just trying to make that clear for the new folks that we've had this problem with the county in the past.
Yes.
Well, the $1.9 million is in the public health department's fund.
I'm just saying.
That's why we're down to 1.9, because they didn't do it the first
year. I agree that we should go to the county. I'm trying to say that money is there to cover shortfalls like this, and I agree that we need to go to the county and say, hey, look, guys, help, you know, it's not meeting the requirements, the $600,000. because I don't know what the six, how, what the contract looks on the 600K, but, you know, that number was maybe the proper number a couple years ago, but as we go forward, that can't be the number forever, because of course there's inflation and everything like that. So at least going long term, we need to go back to the county and renegotiate the 600K.
Right. So in this, in this case, just to, because yes, we've had our going back and forth with the county to get to the point we are today, and then settling on the $600,000 funding annually. I can tell you that at this point today, if I compare our bank account for public health, the two bank accounts we have operating in the investment account, and I compare that back to September 30th, the beginning of the year, we're $10,000 positive. So it's working. This is a change that we just, we hadn't anticipated, that says, hey, we may need to take another look.
And if that proves to be the case, we do plan before their next year budget season to exercise that ability to go back and ask for more.
So how many people are in public health? I'm just 13. Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. Any other questions kind of about the summary?
Yeah, can you explain the essential personnel again, and is there a role?
It's actually essential functions that we're required to do, which is the STDs, TB, immunizations, epidemiology, and preparedness. So,
utilize their full week, or do we use them for other things as we see?
We cannot use them for other things because this document, as I've shown you, those funds are restricted. Each grant is restricted. So if I have somebody that's super good on one grant and could do many, many things, they can't, because they can only perform the functions of that grant, which is the negative thing about grants.
All right. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
We had this conversation last year, and maybe you could, when we go out and get these grants, what's the process, and is there a way to maybe, if this one grant falls by the wayside, is there a backup plan, or is there other grants available?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Here, y'all can each have a mic. Here you go. Y'all can each talk.
So regarding grants, these are generally, all the grants that we have currently are pass-through grants from the feds. They come down from the CDC down to the state, and they are passed down from the state. So essentially our contracts are with the state. We do not actively go out and get grants.
These are firm grants that have been repetitive and have been here for years. Sometimes they take cuts, sometimes they take increases. We don't have someone that works here that is a grant writer. And so we take the grants that are available to us. When we hear about new grants or we're given money that works for our department, we take that, but we're not out actively seeking grants.
Have we thought about bringing a grant writer on board to pick up the slack when there's a situation like this? Just ask.
No.
He wants to say something.
Yeah, he wanted to say something.
There's several things on grant writers. Yes, we have thought about bringing in a grant writer to get grants. Brent makes a very good point. If we get a grant that's worth less than $50,000, it's going to cost him $50,000 to administer it and live up to it the 7 years that it follows. It's not worth the trouble. And Brent, please opine when you want to. But you said something a little different. Have we thought about getting a grant writer to work to see if there's how we can fill in the gaps between the edges where one grant picks up and another one falls off? And we really haven't because I guess we've been doing other things. And really, since 2012 when I got here until a year ago, we were managing the county's public health department for them. And so we were doing whatever it took to keep the boards on the side of the building, and that's it. I really haven't thought about how to go about trying to work a reasonable system with grants.
Well,
so Meghna has looked at a number of grants, and so she might be able to speak more in depth to that as well.
So with grants, you know, the grants that we have currently are for what's required as a local health department. And so all of the functions that we're doing off of those grants are based off of that. When we go and try to get additional grants, you're not going to find the exact same type of grants. Those grants will have different deliverables, different items to do, different restrictions. That means now we're going into a space outside of what we're essential functions. So
we're going to be adding people, but they're not going to be able to fill the gaps of these grants. We'll just be adding services that over time will probably not be able to cover those services either. So that's the risk of the additional grants. They're because they're restricted.
Now, along the grant avenue, when I first got here, the 1115 waiver was expanding to include outpatient services, and they wanted us to look at things that we could do to take care of patient populations to keep people out of the hospital and home and safe. So we signed up for that, and every year we would put a plan together, and then after a couple of years the state started coming back and making changes to the plan, and really 1 year would have no correspondence whatsoever with what we'd been doing the year before. And usually the state would come in with these new rules 2 or 3 months into the new grant year. So you literally had to change your direction mid-year and hope that you could still meet the markers that they set up for you at the end of the grant. So our experience, even with the 1115 waiver, even though the 1115 waiver was the one thing that funded the shortfall of the public health department and actually put extra cash in the tills, it was a lot of work because it was always like you were rebuilding an airplane while it was flying to try to keep it going.
And for the new board members, the $1.9 million that's in the emergency contingency fund is the leftovers from that project, the 1115 waiver project that ended in 2022. Any more questions before we go to the departments? Let's let her, because she does have.
We need to start with page 47.
Okay, so this is the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Grant. This is a pass-through grant from the CDC down to DSHS to us. This budget has been already approved by the Department of State Health Services, so everything that is on here has already been approved. So the public, this grant covers personnel, all the associated costs with the personnel, and then since this is a public health emergency preparedness grant, all of the activities go along with public health emergency preparedness, and so all of the items that we have on here, line items, are associated to that and the work that the grant requires to do.
Is it a match? Do we have to match for this one?
FEP is a 10% match.
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. So in terms of total revenue, you're capturing the money for the grant in 219-158, correct?
Correct.
And then when I flip to the back and I'm looking at total expenditures and I see two, is that a five or an eight? Two five two nine one nine. So the 40,000, I'm doing rough public math here, the $30,000 to $40,000 difference, what is that on this list?
So is this the match? This is the match. So that would mean 10% we have to provide of the total grant amount that's provided to us, and that total amount accounts to the 10% that we put forward plus the 215, the number that was there previously. So if I'm giving 100, so if the state says that we will be providing $100,000 in grants, and then 10,000 of that has to come from us, and then 90,000 has to come, will be coming from the state. So the state is providing 90,000, and then 10,000 is from public health, with a total grant award of $100,000.
Okay, so the total the state is providing is not, so the grant award is more than 219. And you're just, that's the 90% or and the 10% is on the expenditures? Is that what it is?
So the grant, the state's going to award a grant at whatever amount. And I'm not sure what that is on this one without looking at the numbers. And then, but this grant requires, and I'm going to do air quotes, 10% match. When you do the math, it's probably a little bit more than 9%. But then so the right grants... None of the grants are meant to pay for 100% of any of the programs. And those, there may be, and I've got my ringer in the back here, but there may be some expenses on here that the grant will not cover. So our negative, the expense greater than revenue, may actually be a little bit more than 10% in the event there are some things that the grant won't cover in order for us to deliver the services that are being provided.
So how do I guess I'm what I don't understand is when I look at this form, where is that 10% that we're paying for coming from? It's, so it's not on here. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't see that.
That that 10% is going to be coming from that $600,000 that the county's giving us.
From the county funds.
It's going to come from other revenue. So basically, it's being paid off of the balance sheet. So that's why you see the expenses being greater than revenue at the bottom line. Right? So it's in red, right? Negative?
Yes. That's right.
Okay. So that difference is essentially being covered by the county funding, the $600,000 and anything else that we have, you know, above that $1.9 million that we have to keep. It's being paid out of your pocket, out of the balance sheet.
So you're not.
The revenue is not going to cover the expense on this grant. Correct.
And that's...
Yeah, they do. But
well,
I don't think I've answered her question yet. And so we're going to do this. We're going to do this. No, we're going to do this until it comes.
So I understand that we have to provide that 10%.
Yes, ma'am.
But so what are we providing? Is it... In terms of what we're paying, are we paying for pay? I don't think we are, right, because they're covering that. But are we paying for office supplies with that 10%?
Would you explain what the expenditures are in the budget, please?
So it covers everything. And I believe, and Shalene, you could probably talk to this a little bit more, but it's just required overall 10%. It doesn't matter where it's coming from, but any expenses. So I believe the way that Shalene and the county has set it up is that each month a certain percentage is taken for whatever we're asking for reimbursement, a certain percentage is taken each month to make sure that we do hit that 10% by the end of the contract period. It's not restricted to how it's spent.
Yes. There we go. I'm sorry.
So everything that's on the budget and what's allowed, that is what we're asking reimbursement for. And then from that, it's 10% in total.
Okay.
And if we don't spend it, we don't get it.
Yeah, they're purely reimbursement grants.
I have a question about the contract we have with the county at the $600,000 mark. Could we, if we're anticipating a shortage by looking at the budgets that you're putting together, shouldn't we start talking to the county right now and saying, look, the $600K is not going to cover the budget and the costs that we have planning for the next year and say, look, the 600K, if we're not meeting it now, there's not necessarily talking about these backup plans of doing a grant writer and that kind of thing is not going to solve the issue, then we need the county to step up. So I'm thinking maybe we should start talking to them right now.
So I'm going
to... we don't... I'm sorry to be so vague.
Yeah.
But by the August board meeting, we'll know whether it's going to be a shortfall or not. And so right now, it's premature to go talk to them about any increase. They're already through their budget, so it's not by the time we'll have the answer. So it won't work for fiscal year 27. But as soon as we get
it's just like the election expense. We'll know between now and August whether it's going to be part of the budget or not.
So I think we know we're going to get $600,000. And I think for the next year, the $600,000 will cover our shortfall. There's going to come a time, and we knew this would happen, when the $600,000 won't cover it. And we'll need to either do one of two things. We'll have to take money out of the $1.9 million, which is also growing because we're getting interest on that. Or we'll have to go to the county. The interesting thing, I'm going to take a sidebar for a minute. The interesting thing is when we wrote the contract and we put the $1.9 million in for emergency funds, we didn't write in the contract, and I kind of did this on purpose because I didn't know what to do with it. We didn't write how we take it out. We didn't write we've got to go get permission from the county. We didn't say we got to get permission from MCHD. We just didn't say how we take it out. So right now... That's just an uncovered area. But we also have that and the growth in that funds that's available. I don't want to get down into that. I think the county needs to pay. We need to be responsible for what we're doing, and the county needs to pay for the responsible things that we do.
Do we have access to that $1.9 million?
Yeah, it's in his account.
So then
account.
So then we just go ahead and use it.
Well,
and,
that's exactly.
Contract says we will have an emergency contingency fund of $1.9 million. We can reread it and get some legal advice on that. Y'all may be the decision makers. We may not have to go to the county, but it is an interlocal with the county because the $600,000 is also in that agreement. So they're a party to that agreement.
And we know already last year, the first year we were taking care of the public health. The county didn't give us the $600,000. They seemed to forget that they misread the contracts. So we suggested that we'd take it out of our contingency funds, which at that time was $2.5 million. So they've already kind of set a precedent for, you know, raid the kitty whenever we're not performing.
That's just it.
Yeah.
If they need it, they'll take it. So
we also, just to remind you, while we're on sidebars, we have a 120-day gun to the head clause. Either party, if they don't like the way things are going, can say,
peace out.
We're giving it back to the county, or the county could say we're taking it, and you got 120 days to get it all moved.
So I'm happy to answer questions, but I would like it if Megna could do her presentation on each of hers because she does have a critical phone call and she has to be back and able to take that call at 1 o'clock. So she'll need to leave here in about 15 minutes and she is truly the expert on the four grants I've handed out to you.
Go for it.
Do you want to do city readiness? Page 44, CRI. What number do you want to go in? What order?
Doesn't matter for me. So CRI, a city readiness initiative. This
isn't the good news.
So the good news is last week we found out that we may be getting additional dollars. That budget has not been approved yet, and so we will likely be getting more funding for this. And so that's, you know, that's something that we find out very last minute. Again, they're pass-through grants, so whatever is decided at the federal level, and once that comes down to the state, that's when the state decides. They can also decide not to provide us any funding. This year they have decided to allow us to have additional funding, so... Again, that budget is not complete or approved yet at this time, but we are expecting.
An additional $29,000.
What does that grant do? I know it says activities allowed on here. Are you providing services to our employees or are you serving as a representative for disaster response?
So public health, this is a sister grant to the public health emergency preparedness grant. And so public health emergency preparedness is similar to disaster preparedness, but we are serving the community or jurisdiction.
So we were just talking about city readiness initiative. How is that different?
It's different in the activities that are allowed, and it has a lot of exercises, point of distribution site requirement required. The requirements are really for us to be able to have the strategic national stockpile if that was activated, which is in the case of an emergency for something. We are responsible for obtaining the stockpile and making sure we have distribution sites and having locations ready for that in the county. So that's the main goal for that.
Thank you.
And this grant also has a 10% match, and this grant is also, the budget has been approved by DSHS.
What's the point of this grant?
She just said it.
I thought that was the stock.
That's a CRI.
That's the CRI.
The CRI.
And for awareness purposes, FEP and CRI federally come from the same funding source.
Okay, and are we stockpiling, and so does that count in terms of turning around our stockpile?
We do not have our own stockpile, but it is in preparations for it.
Thank you.
Surveillance, page 46. What do you call that?
So EAIDU surveillance, EAIDU stands for Emerging and Infectious Disease Unit. This is really the core of the epidemiological services that we provide here. It is for all the immediately notifiable conditions and Texas notifiable conditions that are required to be reported in the state of Texas. So the investigations for that, the outbreak response, everything is based off of this grant. The activities allowed for that are infectious disease investigation, prevention, outbreak response, surveillance, and investigations. This is not a matching grant, and this one also, budget has been approved by DSHS.
No questions?
I don't think we have any questions.
No questions?
We'll look at FIG, Public Health Infrastructure Grant, page 49.
Page 49?
This is the one that it will be ending when those funds run out.
Correct, yes. So this was a five-year grant. We did not utilize the entire five-year grant because the funds are going to be expended prior to the 5 years. We also started utilizing these funds a little bit later. It was not required to start at the time of the grant contract. It was essentially at any point in time from the grant contract for the five-year grant that you're able to utilize it. So we started utilizing it about 2.5 years ago. And so these funds are expended to run out this upcoming fiscal year. This is not a match grant, and the budget is also approved by DSHS. Any questions?
Anybody got any questions? So this will run out at the end of fiscal year 27. Is that correct?
Before the end of
that.
Year.
So that's why the number is so much smaller for 27 versus 26.
Correct.
Okay.
And so just...
how far into 27 does it go?
There's some personnel changes that could be made to make it stretch longer. We're looking at all those opportunities to make this stretch longer. As it sits now...
Currently, at the end of January of 27. So one thing about this grant also to make you all aware is that the fund, so it's a five-year grant, it was a lump sum, and essentially it is still a reimbursement grant, but I have to provide budgets to the state for each year of the grant period, which is from December 1st through November 30th for each year. So this upcoming fiscal year for MCHD, which starts in October, it's actually a different budget period. Whatever is not utilized or expended in the FIGS grant budget period can be rolled over. So each year we've had some additional funds get rolled over to the next year. So essentially we have until November of 27 to completely utilize all of the funds on here. However, based off of the budget that's been set right now, we are expected to run out by January 27.
Is there hope for potential?
We're not quite sure. There's been chatter about it, but nothing has been provided in writing at this period in time.
And these employees primarily do administrative duties is what I'm seeing.
No, it's for, so they do all of the functions. Currently we have myself. And
he does administrative duties, grant management, staff management, and participates in everything EPI and preparedness.
Correct. This grant is actually, it's not, it's restricted, but it's for infrastructure to ensure that we have the infrastructure in place for epidemiology and public health, and so we've utilized these funds for sustaining the staff that we've had previously in order to have the essential functions that we need.
So there are no public, like, there's no providers or public health, like, people who are actually...
As an epidemiologist herself, as okay. The manager, there's an epidemiologist and there is a data analyst that is on that team. The other half position was for the clinic manager. We have not filled that position, which will allow their funds to go a little bit longer. I'm assuming that role for the last year because these are essential functions that they're providing and we wanted to stretch those grant dollars. So we're stretching me to allow them to not stretch so far.
So 3.5 FTEs, and is it epidemiologist, a clinic manager?
Half of a clinic manager.
So epidemiology and preparedness manager, myself. We have an epidemiologist, epidemiology analyst, and then half of the clinic manager. Any other questions?
Any more questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So just in terms of philosophy, in terms of how we budget these departments in public health and the grant specifically, so we've got certain core grants that we've gotten renewed year after year since we took over public health. But those typically do not run, just like Megna was kind of explaining, December to November 30th. They can start at any month. It just depends on when their grant year is. They typically don't line up with our fiscal year. And so during a fiscal year, it's really not uncommon to see for the same function two different grants, one for the first period of the year and one for the remaining period of our fiscal year. Our philosophy is we're only going to budget for the grant that we've actually been awarded, actually signed and accepted. We're not anticipating and budgeting based on anticipation.
So the RLSS grant supports the public health clinic. They provide enough money, $67,000 a year, and that funds, all of that money goes to partial funding of the RN that does the STDs, the immunizations, and she backs up TB in the absence of the RN and TB. The other money that comes out of this is $269 a year for supplies. So that grant in no way covers the personnel. And so you see that deficit at the bottom. So there's a $60,000 shortfall there. So that goes, that money comes from the $600,000 provided to us by the county. So that's $60,000 of it, 10%.
This isn't on this list, correct?
No, that's the only one that's not on that list. So okay. They're required to be work in the clinic and support TB, STD, and immunizations. So that's the restriction to that grant. And that is the only grant that supports the clinic.
Any questions? Thank you.
Page 41.
So here's where you see the $495,888.7 thousand, most of which is the personnel that do cover and run that clinic. That's the front desk clerk, the TB case manager, the TB nurse, and now a part-time TB nurse, because of the workload of that staff is not sustainable with lesser staffing. And so those funds come from the public, the county funding of $600,000. This is the area that we're working closely with the state and the region to make some changes to where that money comes from.
Am I reading this correctly on the expenditures for payroll? The budget in 26 was $362,000.
That is correct. Because okay. That we had one staff nurse in that department at that time, we've had to add another 1.5 to keep up with the workload.
Okay, so now it's at 509.
That's correct. That right? And again, this budget's to have a manager. I do not believe we will ever have a manager. It's just not fundable. So the other half, the other 0.5 of manager is in this bucket.
Okay, any more questions? All right, we're good. Thank you.
And just so, this is the whole reason we went to the county for the $600,000. This was the known deficit. It's been known for years. And that's part of the reason we've had to add an additional half person to catch up on the work that went undone because of the shortfalls before.
And if we do decide to go to the county, it seems like adding that person, funding for that person would be the best argument to the county.
Correct. I agree with you. Okay.
All righty, next.
So here you see the interest from the emergency contingency threshold in the revenue, as well as the $600,000. That's how we get to the $665,000. The general liability insurance for the public health, we keep everything separated. So wherever you see these line items, in the MCHD budget, that's Fund 10, this is Fund 22. So these are the public health portion of those funds. Don't always have to have a single audit, or are we gonna have to have one this year?
Depends on how much funding we get.
Yeah, so that's where this single audit is budgeted. Their employee recognition, because it's not covered by grants, the $75 a person you see here in that budget, the manager, Megna, would be in the administration budget. Liability insurance, as well as a little bit of funding, so when we host meetings, they're able to provide water and coffee.
Quick question about revenue. The $600K is what we've been talking about, but it talks about interest earned from the $1.9 million. So we budgeted 76,000 in interest for 20. Six, Right now, we're at 37. And then we have a budget of, is that 95?
65,
okay. I mean, we're so far into the year, do we really think we're going to hit 65? I mean, we didn't, we only have 37 this year.
We'll take another look at it.
Remember, we didn't set that account up as an investment account until December.
Oh, yeah, it was late. It took a while to get that in place. That's correct.
So you're indicating that it was not an investment account for a certain amount of time, and so you weren't earning as much money as you could.
We weren't earning interest at that time.
Okay.
On that, until the account was set up in December.
Correct.
Representing two quarters versus three, as we would anticipate.
Correct.
Yes.
So if you double that.
If you were to annualize based on what you know now, is 65K still a realistic number?
Well, it would probably be
74.
37 times 2. Maybe it should be 75.
Okay. It's actually higher then? Or
interest rates could be. Or
dropping, yeah.
You tell me.
We don't know.
So we can increase it, but we thought 65 was a reasonable.
Okay, fair enough.
And so we might do better than that, just depending on how the Fed, if they drop rates, then we're obviously those rates will go down.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. Like I said, I'm still employed. So.
Also in regard to that, I'm not moving that interest income out of that account and into the operating account, so we are getting some compounding on that as well.
Okay. Any other questions? Oh, good. Thank you.
Does. So that's all of the manager presentations. I don't know if we've got a list on action items today, but I do want to talk for just a second once we see. Is there action items today? Just a couple, right? Oh, okay.
So that's why it takes so long.
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
It's not current.
So while they're pulling that up, I can go to this part of what I wanted to talk about. And that is we opened up yesterday saying that this is a workshop. And I think we've had a lot of good discussion, exchange of ideas, et cetera. But I would like to leave here with as many things that we know we can do to that budget as possible so that we don't have to wait until later in the year. And so I know Shannon had an opportunity to really state her case for the need for the accounting supervisor. We had a number of other things in terms of personnel. I know we had vests yesterday that was really a topic of discussion. We had a couple options here. I don't know if you've gotten the data you requested yet. If there's anything in terms of what could we do to the budget so that the next time you see it, you don't have to think about it again, and it'll just help. It'll help everybody. I'll just say that. So if we do have those things and we can make those decisions today, I would love to do that.
So can I throw something out then?
Yes, ma'am.
I appreciate the information on the vests. I think for me, to gain a better understanding, having worn vests and helmets before, is when we say we're going to purchase 4 vests and 4 helmets for 10. I'm looking at option 2. I'm sorry.
Yes.
If I'm looking at the 86,000. So I assume, and we didn't talk about this, and that's why I'm bringing it up now. We didn't talk about helmet size and fit. I'm assuming it's not one size fit all. And then if we get these 10, how are we working sizing? And that's also part of the reason, just kind of full disclosure, why I really wanted to understand how we're set up with each of these, with each of the districts. Because here I'm assuming by this option, and I wanted to clarify this as well, that you would be putting. So it says 10, so 4 district chiefs. I don't know. Maybe I just need more information. I'll stop talking.
Red has
On option two, it would be the district chiefs, the four of them, the deputy chief, Tahoe, that's here, and then Jason's emergency management vehicle would have vests. So essentially leadership Tahoes. They're centrally located in their district. That type of response, an active shooter, the CAD that dispatches trucks would automatically pull the district chief. They would get there among the first arriving vehicles and distribute vests and helmets to the first arriving ambulances, and then everybody else after that would be in staging. The helmets and vests are one size fits most in this setup, unfortunately.
Do the helmets have like a webbing inside?
Yeah, they have. I mean, they're adjustable, like adjustable chin strap and some clicking in the back, like a construction helmet, so that it secures, but it's not custom. It's far from that.
So if it's, if you're doing, and I guess maybe just the math for the 10. So you've got four district chiefs, one deputy chief. So then it says three squads. So where are the, are you putting them at each district location? I guess I'm trying to understand from an employment standpoint, the district chief comes out and they've got their one, but you said they're bringing more, so.
They're all in the trunk, yeah. There's a, in the back of the Tahoe, they're lined up in the back, multiple vests and multiple helmets.
So they would, there would be four Tahoes with two vests each. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Let me look at option.
I don't understand.
Let me look at option two and see what Jason put together. Here we go.
That's what they wanted.
We're talking about option two, though. Yes. We're only focusing right. On option two.
Yes, so option two is, option two is 10 vehicles. The 10 vehicles is the second bullet point. Four district chief Tahoes, one deputy chief Tahoe, three squads, and one emergency manager truck. That's the 10 vehicles. The first bullet point, 10 frontline units, four vests and four helmets per unit. So every one of the 10 units will have four vests and four helmets. 40 vests and helmets total. Plus four spare helmets and four spare vests.
So
spare. 44. Correct. And that minus, that is, have, has been our deployment model for the last 10 years with vests and helmets. District chief and deputy chief. Those units. This would add the squads and the emergency manager. All of this is flexible. We could say the emergency manager shouldn't carry any, so reduced by four. There's flexibility here in how we manage that.
I think there's more of a concern about the one size fits all, because I'm guessing none of the district chiefs, deputy chiefs, emergency manager are female.
No, they are all. There's some are smaller than you.
Got small, no, yeah. And then you mentioned Jason, who was not small.
Yeah.
So we're wondering how you
very politically.
Yeah, it's that is the barrier for doing vests and helmets in our deployment, because there's various size individuals. There's two industry paths. One is you spend the money to custom fit everybody, which I would say is not the best way to spend taxpayer money, or you go one size fits all and hope for the best, fits most. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So they have a.
But they're not adjustable as far as length. So
they are. They are.
6.5 foot and someone 5 foot.
Their shoulder is adjustable and the.
Can you get a unit?
We can bring in one that's expired.
Okay.
From the warehouse over, so you can see.
Okay. So you truly believe these are pretty much one size will fit most?
Yes, most. Okay. We have extremes on both ends.
Sure.
But most I would agree with.
And remind me again how often you train with them on, because it's not like you just throw those things on.
Yeah,
just...
I mean, our goal would be for everybody during new hire orientation, they train on them, and then a once a year touch.
So Jason talked about the exercises that they're doing, you know, once a month or whatever.
Yep.
I assume that they're on at that time for those units that are involved in those exercises?
It depends on, we're trying to do 1 to 2 drills a month countywide. Sometimes that is a tabletop where you're not really doing anything active, and sometimes it is as lifelike as you can get it, like the one that we're having in 2 weeks at Oak Ridge High School. It's full scale. So in that situation, you would do your full scale vest helmet. But it's randomized, so we treat it like a real call. So whatever units are closest to that school at that time are going to get pulled in, so it's not everybody in the system getting the touches. Good questions. Very good questions.
What, to go see one?
Mm-hmm. It's the 5th of August. That's a Wednesday. It's in the evening. It's the next full-scale live drill.
5th of August, and where is that?
When in August?
August 5th. Wednesday, August 5th. Be happy to have whoever can attend shadow us. We wouldn't put on vests and helmets because we currently don't have any. But you can see the magnitude of the drill.
Anyway.
Yeah. Huh?
We're not getting shot at anyway,
no,
so it's okay.
No.
Time and place?
I can send everybody a calendar invite, but it's at Oak Ridge High School at 6 p.m.
I'll be on a cruise, so y'all are welcome to...
College Park. It's at College Park High School, not Oak Ridge. College Park High School. College Park. College Park.
I think so.
I'm going to say one day from now, I'm going to show you how to adjust and fit.
Okay.
So here's the helmet.
Got the turn
with the dial.
Mm-hmm. Just like a and safety helmet.
The straps also shrink.
No.
These have the cummerbund that adjusts the size side to side, fit snugly as well as length.
Okay.
And so we're wearing the same one. I have better coverage than him because he didn't even show.
I would have shoulder shot.
And the new ones are the same, but they just
they're more
in terms
curved.
Of the okay. And you don't,
I
but you don't have plates on.
Yes, this is white.
I sure do. On the side, give side plates?
No.
That's Kevlar.
Yeah, so she just has a front and back.
Front and back, I guess, ma'am. The Kevlar on the side.
They're all front and back, right? Are there any side
correct.
Plates?
I thought the new ones had side panels.
I don't know.
So they have side panels. They don't have the ballistic plate. So they have Kevlar on the side. The cummerbund is Kevlar. But the
so
ballistic plates.
The actual plate is in there.
Yeah, but
this is Kevlar,
correct.
But not plated.
Mm-hmm. And then there's training to know exactly where optimally you want it to hit, right?
So you want your chest covered, a little bit lower, a little higher than that, but
okay.
There, it's lost it.
Oh, right here?
Yep.
I'm just going to shoot him in the face.
Yep. So your ballistic plate's right here, Kevlar behind it, Kevlar on both sides, all 3A. There's just a rifle plate in the front and the rifle plate's in the rear. But the only difference between the new ones, they have a little bit more of a cut of a curve that'll come on a little bit more like this to like full range of motion versus a big rectangle. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So what it looks like operationally is the first arriving law enforcement officers, fire, and EMS.
Less likely to die of that.
Law enforcement's going to go in, and then behind them is a rescue task force. So law enforcement comes in. This door clears this room, clears that room. We come in behind, tourniquet, drag patients to a casualty collection point, and then you just leapfrog through the building. And then you're working with command outside on transporting, picking up the patients and then transporting them.
And so just to remind me, because I don't have a good memory, what is the frequency that we've been called out to be in a warm zone or possibly being needed to go into a hot zone? Have we ever been called out?
So I've been here 8 years. We have this could be real or is real, less than one. I can count less than one hand. So I'd say 3 to 4 that I can for sure think of in 8 years.
One thing I want to say is weird. We're very careful, many would say overly careful, about staging calls, okay? We don't go into calls, just regular calls during the day, knowing that there's a problem until we have law enforcement in there or until it's cleared. That's our MO. Sometimes we'll sit on the side of a road for 45 minutes just waiting. And we get some flack from that from patients because they say, well, you know, where were you? Well, we were waiting for it to clear. So we're very careful with those kinds of calls. What he's talking about is going to be something very unusual, like a school shooting or something like that. So.
Well, and sometimes there's a delay, too, because the law enforcement's not making the calls back to alarm to be able to get us to go
yeah,
in. Too.
Yeah, there's all kinds of reasons. Sometimes fire goes in, and they're sort of cowboys, too, and they'll clear the scene. And we don't know whether we should really clear or not. So
yeah, the biggest delay nationally is law enforcement floods the scene, and nobody else can get there because they've parked in every nook and cranny, and we can't even get up there. So that's the biggest delay.
We just need push bars on the fronts of the trucks, and we'll just move the vehicles for them.
We do have some brush guards. We try not to use them to push law enforcement out of the way, though I think that might be frowned upon.
So it just sounds like that option two is more fiscally responsible, but also, since it's the 10 frontline units, and it will be the district chiefs and stuff that... you're going to be in the know, and you're going to get there and be able to provide whatever you need to provide to whoever might need to go into a warm zone. So it just seems like a more logical choice. Yeah.
I think if you're going to do this, it's by far the more logical now, because quite frankly, when you look at it, when this happens, people aren't going to get their stuff on, or it's going to take them forever to get it on. It's going to be a mess. And if everybody had one on their truck, it's still going to be a mess. And we've been lucky so far. I mean, we could have. We don't want to ever use them. We want to try to be as fiscally responsible as possible. We don't want to be like Dallas was when they had the downtown shooting. And all the medics showed up, jumped out of the truck, started running behind walls, getting shot at because they could see people shot on the street. And I'm afraid that's what would happen with our people too. But I'm not real sure how much having these in our trucks is going to make that big of a difference. It'll make some difference, but...
I mean, of course, what we would want for our EMS is kind of like the same scenario when you're on an airplane with your child. You know, put your mask on and then the child... you've got to take care of the person who's going to take care of everyone
correct.
Else. If you go rushing in and don't right. have equipment, you're not going to do any good to the next guy that might need your
correct.
Help. So,
correct.
They've all been trained in that. How many of them will pay attention? I can't say. I mean, main thing we need to do is stage them back so that they're not there to get in that situation.
But unless you're in that situation and see someone that's critical, you know you need to get to. I mean, I get it.
Right.
Something might happen. So if we went with option two, and then you could always revisit in a few years if you felt the need was greater based on some incident or something, right?
Right.
Or based on better information.
Yeah, trends in general. I would support option two. I think it's what we've been doing for the last 10 years, and it's worked well, and it also expands VEST on four more response vehicles, so we can expand the reach with those VEST and also maximizing the money. I would support option two as well.
Thanks for addressing our concerns over the one size fits most.
Yeah,
I couldn't imagine how that...
yeah.
to play out.
So. Thanks to our mannequins.
I'd rather be Melissa in a gunfight than him, though. Sorry, I'm like.
Okay, so we're gonna make that change. We're gonna switch out option two for option one, and reduce that. Okay.
It's in there right now. They're gonna put this.
And then just real quick, we're gonna update the rents. Station 13, we're not renting anymore. And then counseling services, we're gonna adjust that budget down from 50,000. To 25,000. So we've got solid action items there. Like I said, the accounting got a chance to address and really sell their personnel changes. Y'all saw that, went through that yesterday. Do y'all have any concerns over personnel changes that we need to follow up on, that we can get answers today, or we're kind of good to move forward on personnel? Were there any other topics?
Talking about personnel, you're talking about in the accounting department?
Overall, the headcount.
Overall.
Overall, reducing by six. You know, we said we're going to increase by two in administrative, and then reduce by eight in alarm and EMS for a net of minus six. And so here's the changes. So adding an accounting supervisor, materials management, we added an inventory control specialist, convert the assistant medical director from contract. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
We're going to go in executive session for that, so that won't be changed until after our board meeting.
We're not going to, we'll know what to do following that meeting. Add administrative coordinator, that's in fleet. Reduction of open position to the new software efficiencies, that's in billing. So reducing one staff because we are doing well with our software there. Transfer from IT to business process, so that was a minus three. And then, so minus three for IT, plus three for...
Yeah, it's just a trade.
I was looking to see where that happened, and it's not jumping out at me. Adding a human resource generalist. And then there was a kind of back and forth, too, on reduced two training captains. I think that's in alarm. So we're all good there. That's all been hashed out.
Quality.
Okay. And then the deployment changes reduces by eight there. That's a switch. So sounds like we're good there. No additional explanation. Was there any other topics that...
You mentioned a minute ago reduction of eight in alarm?
EMS, the deployment of EMS.
That's okay, was minus you said alarm, eight. So okay.
Yes, sir. It's a minus two in alarm. Any other topics that, you know, we could...
I don't have any. Jackie? Bob?
So our next meeting to talk about budget specifically is August 18th, the budget
committee. She's going to talk over me.
Yes. We do. So we'll have...
should be on our calendar on several meetings.
Well, August 8th. Yes.
Like we discussed, they're going to take all this.
Right.
Go back to the drawing board. Start completely over. No. Make a few tweaks here and there.
I have it on my calendar.
And then we'll talk about it again.
Yes.
So we're collecting these questions. We've told the managers they have until next Thursday to answer them, but we believe there's so few, we believe that we will be able to get them answered before then. So as soon as we gather everything, we send it to the CFO, and he coordinates with getting that over to you. But no later than next Thursday will we have it to him.
Very good. All right.
This is just a look at August calendar. So we have that. Like I mentioned the committee meeting. It's not a very pretty look, but.
Okay. Well, if there's no more questions, then I'll leave it to you, Mr. Shirley.
All righty. Well, thank you, everybody, for going over the detail, the budget during this workshop. And since we have no other business in front of us, we're going to adjourn at 1:12. Thank you.